When the world is calling, whether it's sunny beaches, global cities, or boardrooms that can't wait, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, a new nonstop to Montreal on Air Canada, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, Columbus makes travel simpler, smarter, and closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. I am Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you're having a nice time, whatever you're up to. We have got sunshine up here in North Yorkshire today, which is wonderful news. So I've got a fantastic guest on the show today. There's a big summit happening this week in London. I'm not going to spoil it yet until we get our guest on, but we are going to be speaking to the founder and also the guy that kind of, you know, runs the show from a creative perspective, the team, everything else. So we're going to be talking to him shortly. As you know, I always want to start with a bit of news. This was on mygreenpod.com on the 10th of October, so just 4 days ago. I thought it was a really interesting report. It's the Living Planet Report 2024. The headline is: average wildlife population sizes decline by 73% in 50 years as WWF warns tipping points would destabilize societies everywhere. Now, that's, you know, catastrophic, shocking news. But let me read this out to you because I think it's important and I think it will actually set the scene a little bit for today's guest. So it goes on to say, monitored global wildlife populations have seen a catastrophic average decline in size of 73% in 50 years from 1970 to 2020, according to the latest edition of the Living Planet Index published today, which was on the 12th, as part of WWF, which is World Wildlife Fund's biennial Living Planet Report. So, subtitled A System in Peril, the landmark report warns that the world is fast approaching dangerous, irreversible tipping points, including the potential collapse of the Amazon rainforest and the rapid melting of polar ice, both of which help regulate the planet's climate and sustain a wide range of life. Passing these tipping points, the report warns, would pose grave threats to humanity and most species and would damage Earth's life support systems and destabilize societies everywhere. Determining our future. So the report reviews global progress towards the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs, which are vital for avoiding these tipping points. It calls for urgent action to transform the way we grow our food, generate energy, and run our financial system to ensure nature is protected and restored. Now, there's a quote here from Tanya Steele, who is the chief exec of WWF. She says, the Living Planet Report serves as a health check for the planet, with wildlife population sizes a key indicator for the state of the wider natural world. A staggering 73% decline in just 50 years is, and I agree, truly shocking and must be a wake-up call for our leaders ahead of the crucial COP16 and COP29, which are just around the corner. I think COP16 is this month, which is the Nature COP, and COP29 is the Climate COP. More worrying still is the prospects of reaching global tipping points, risking not just the survival of precious animal species, but the basis for animal society as well. We rely on nature for so much: the food we eat, the air we breathe, our mental health and well-being. If we pass these tipping points, we'll be putting our societies, our economies, and the future of our children at risk. It's not too late to change course, and this could be a turning point instead of a tipping point. As a G7 nation, the UK must take bold action to transform our finance, energy, and food systems to protect our world. We are calling for a Living Planet Act to ensure the UK government leads the way in tackling the global crisis and works tirelessly to meet the crucial 2030 global targets. Now, there is more to this article. If you go to mygreenpod.com, as I said, it was published on the 10th of October. There's one more quote I want to read out to you. This is from Mauricio Vovadic. He's the executive director at WWF, but in Brazil, which I think is important. This is to do with the Amazon, right? So it says up to 17% of the Amazon rainforest was estimated to have already been destroyed. 17%. Now, the world's richest and most varied forest appears to be losing its resilience to change, which is the tipping point, and warnings are flashing red. So he says, if we keep going as we are, it is a question of when we pass the Amazon tipping point, not if. The areas on the edges of the rainforest are already emitting more carbon than they are absorbing, and the dry conditions that are being driven in part by deforestation are now leading to fires breaking out in remote areas of the forest. The collapse of the rainforest would have huge effects on the region and also the world, as vast amounts of carbon are released and its role in regulating the world's climate is lost. We must urgently stop deforestation and accelerate large-scale restoration of the Amazon and neighboring Cerrado and Pantanal, which are other forested regions in the area. Since restoration also captures carbon from the atmosphere, it both benefits biodiversity loss and helps tackling the climate crisis. If we don't succeed, the consequences for the Amazon and the world could be catastrophic. So, look, I know this is all doom and gloom, and I'm really sorry to say that, but unless we take action as individuals, and on a collective note, and I don't mean just, one person, recycling or something, we've really, really got to stop buying into fossil fuel companies, stop buying into companies that still are very much involved in deforestation. And anybody that's running a business or working for a business, challenge those bosses and just remind them that, everything comes from nature. Even if you're a service company, the energy you use, the materials you use, the products you sell, the fuels that it takes to run the company, to get people in and out of work, every single thing that we possibly monetize comes from nature. Even if it's your own personal labor, because unless you eat food and drink water and breathe air and walk on the earth, you are not going to be able to be, a working citizen in the world. So think about it. This situation that we're in, this economic climate that we're in, has disconnected us from the very source of beingness. And so I come at it from a quite philosophical perspective that if we can remember that we are nature, that we are constantly connected to nature, then we might actually begin to resolve the problems that we have in the world today. I would say it's the most existential threat, the most important threat. Yes, there are other things going on in the world which are diabolical right now, but this is the biggie. This is the one that really, it makes us make a decision about how we want to, what kind of planet we want to leave behind for our children. So this brings me nicely to our next guest. I've got a gentleman here who is, I mean, firstly, he's doing some astounding work. He's actually gathering, for want of a better word, investors, people with money, organizations, companies that are actually trying to make a difference in the world. It's called impact investing. Today's guest is Will Haler. He's from the Blue Earth Summit. He's actually the co-founder of the Blue Earth Summit, which is happening this Wednesday and Thursday. I'm going to be speaking. I'm holding a meditation session. I'm also going to be on a panel to do with uncomfortable conversations. So I'm going to be talking a lot more about nature there. Let me just read a little bit about, or rather, what Will has said. And this is to do with a theory on change. So He said, at Blue Earth Summit, we are people on a mission to transform the way the world works. To reach our goals, we need to work across industry, policy, and community to reduce our collective impact. This transformative approach is good for business and it's essential for our planet. Blue Earth is inspired by action, adventure, and the great outdoors. We'll get into that. Time spent in nature has the power to reconnect us all, inspired by environmentally conscious business practices, which is what I'm talking about, those businesses that can make a difference. We know businesses play a pivotal role in the driving sustainability transitions, but leaders often face challenges such as knowledge gaps, misaligned incentives, and the perception of sustainability at a cost rather than an opportunity. Our summit reconnects the world around a shared set of values and a common consensus. We create thriving business ecosystem where companies of all sizes actively contribute to environmental regeneration, society equity, and economic resilience, inspired and empowered by Blue Earth Summit. Will Haler, welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jarvis. I'm really, really pleased to be here.
Not at all. It's great. It's great. I mean, how busy are you with the show happening just in a few days away?
Well, this is, it's not the first time we've run Blue Earth, so every year it gets a little bit more sort of, it gets easier, but actually every year it gets a little bit bigger. So we are busy, but actually this is the best bit. This is when you're 48 hours away from welcoming people to something that we've been building all year.
Yeah.
So we're busy, but actually under control, which is why I'm talking to you.
Yeah, good to hear. Good to hear. That's fantastic. I mean, I've been a keen supporter and, been involved in Blue Earth Summit for, I think, for 4 years. This could even be my fifth year, something like that now.
So every year then.
Every year then. There you go. Yeah, since the beginning. I mean, I personally love it. I go to, nearly every sustainability conference, summit. I'm a speaker or on a panel, or we're involved as media partners. There's some magic about yours. There really is. There's some, the people that come, the energy that you create, the space that you hold, the conversations that you have. I mean, I remember 1 year I interviewed Tim Smith, and it was one of the highlights of my kind of, in interview moments. It was just absolutely brilliant. But how do you think, why do you think that energy is generated at your events? What do you think it is? Because I often put this down to founders, people with vision, and we're going to get into yours. But what do you think it is?
I think it's a shared connection to the outdoors. I think that is something that a lot of other events in a similar space to Blue Earth haven't got. How do you connect with people's passions? How do we frame the position that the world finds us in as an opportunity? And that, for a lot of people that would go to a traditional climate event, they say, no, this is not an opportunity. This is a crisis. This is bad news. But I think what we're doing is getting talking to people's passions, talking positively around opportunities for change. I think broadly speaking, the consensus is there that change needs to happen and is happening. And how do we go further, faster? And I think there's an energy to that, which has always been there, but even more so as we've sort of every year we've run Blue Earth, we've learned a little bit more about ourselves, a little bit more about our audience. And if you're going to host anything, call it a party, call it a conference, but we like to call it a festival for the future. The energy's got to be high, so we spend a lot of time thinking about that.
Yeah, well, I think you do it very, very well, and I love the idea that it's a festival, because it really is. It does have that spirit. I mean, your last few events have been in Bristol, and of course, this one now is in London. Have you still got some tickets left? Are there still spots for people to come?
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to be sold out, but
Yeah.
actually, we've got a bigger venue. It's
Yes.
bigger than our Bristol venue. That's why we moved from Bristol to London, because we outgrew the venue. So we do have a few tickets left. I'd love to be saying we're sold out, but no, there are some tickets left. So if people are thinking about joining us this week, then please do.
Well, it's blueearthsummit.com, blueearthsummit.com. If you want to look into it, I mean, I'd highly advise that if you are in business or you're wanting to get into business or you want to meet a network of people, this is the place to go if you're interested in becoming a solution to the climate crisis. Genuinely, I would say get involved in it. Thanks, Will. So let's talk a bit about you. I mean, you. Are you a surfer? Is that your kind of outdoor pursuit? Is that something that was a passion or a sport or what was it?
Definitely, it's a passion since growing up. That is, I'd love to define myself as a surfer. I think as I sort of reach my sort of 40s now, I have to sort of, I'm as much a family man as a guy that runs events and does media. But if I want to say what I am at my core, I'm an absolutely avid surfer. Love spending time by the water, bringing up kids by the sea, and surfing is an absolute passion and is the root that got us into this whole movement in the first place. So yeah, I
Tell
am.
me about that route. Tell me about that route. What is the route for you?
I think from our perspective, if you spend time in the outdoors and in nature, you're on the front line. You understand what's going on at that very, taking the oceans as the obvious environment that you're talking about with surfing. You see problems in the ocean. You talk about sewage. That is just a huge problem in the UK and around the world, actually, and more so in other parts of the world. And so you want to look after it. And I think where Blue Earth started, it had this rather naive but basic approach, which was protect our playgrounds. Those that spend time in nature are naturally inspired to want to protect it. And we've obviously evolved that thinking since then. But in its earliest stage, that is where Blue Earth started, with an ambition to protect the things that you love most.
Yeah, nice. And I think, just for the benefit of all our listeners, I think there was a survey done certainly within the last couple of years. Quote me if I'm wrong here, because you might know a bit more about it, Will, but most sea coastlines are too polluted to swim in, aren't they, these days?
Yeah, I think we've got, we talk about the sort of the role of business and why we are so business focused. But you look at water companies right now, and it is so out of balance. Are water companies serving the needs of society? Well, yes, they are, because we all turn the tap on. We're lucky enough to do so and have drinking water come out of it. But it's what goes out the other end. It's just a massive problem, and the water companies aren't coping. And I think everyone with any form of logic would say that that is fundamentally wrong, and we need to come up with something way better than we do already. So that's the sort of the activist part of me speaking there, is that we'd love to see a change to the way that water gets managed here in the UK.
I love that. I mean, there's organisations like Surfers Against Sewage and Oceana, and these organisations are constantly campaigning to keep our waters cleaner. I mean, I live up in North Yorkshire, Will, literally in the Dales Park, and even my local river, the Wharfedale River, is often too polluted to be able to swim in. And we're right at the top of the country. The reservoirs are literally kind of all around us. So. It's a scary time. It's a scary time, particularly with the information that I read out before about 73% of species, having kind of gone in the last 50 years. I mean, that's it, how do you stay positive, mate?
Well, I definitely stay positive in the fact of what's Blue Earth's role in all of this, because you
Yes.
mentioned some amazing charities there. Whether it's Surfers Against Sewage, Oceana, Blue Marine Foundation,
Yeah, another
they
one.
are campaigning hard and successfully for protection. 30% of the oceans by 2030. So we didn't feel that Blue Earth needed to be another campaign. We really want Blue Earth to be part of the solution. And I think our belief, and perhaps we'll come on to this, is the awareness is there. We know about the problem, but are we talking enough about the solution? Where are we really getting into it and saying, okay, well, if waterways are as polluted as they are, what are we going to do about it? What are the solutions to the problem?
Yeah, no,
And
this is brilliant. Let's get into the solution shortly. Sorry, Will, did I cut you over? I'm sorry there.
no, we see the solutions to the problem as the opportunities. That's why we talk about this being an opportunity.
Yeah, no, I love this. I love this. That's exactly what this show is all about. It can't be all doom and gloom. There's enough of that going on in the world as it is. We're going to go to our first set of commercial breaks. We're going to come back to Will after the break, and we're going to talk about some of those solution-based actions and opportunities that Blue Earth, Will, and his team are showcasing to us. Back in a second.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean. I'm here with Will Haler from Blue Earth Summit. If you've missed the first bit of the show, then don't worry, because we're just about to get into the most important bit: solutions, opportunities, actions that the Blue Earth Summit is inspiring us to make. Will, before we do that, I just want to ask you, I was really touched by your surfing and your connection to the earth. Was that? Can you remember any specific pivotal moments in your life where you thought, oh my God, I really, really need to take action on this? What was there anything, or was it an amalgamation of lots of things?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mentioned this sort of when you're talking about sort of me as a person, is it Will the surfer or actually Will the dad? And actually, you know, from that's where it all starts, is family connection. And I've got two boys. I live in Devon and we live on the River Exe. And
nice.
My eldest sort of is now 13, but when he was 10, we were going around on a little boat and I was towing him behind it. And anyway, long story short, me being a sort of pushy parent, surfer dad, saying, go on, hold the rope, jump up on the board. My son was just dragging along behind it, swallowing way too much water. And he ended up getting E. coli, which made him very ill, actually, which then brought on early onset of ulcerative colitis, which has basically changed his whole life. And had he not have contracted E. coli, he would have, ulcerative colitis is a form of Crohn's, and you would get that in later life rather than in early life. So he's in one of these younger people that's got it earlier. And so you're like, hang on a minute, this is such a shame. You know, this is a beautiful river that we live by. I moved out of London in my sort of 30s to bring up kids down by the water. You're not expecting, you know, to go and play in the ocean or play in a river mouth. You're not expecting to get ill. And even since that happened, that was sort of 4 or 5 years ago, you're like, this situation has got worse. And then you look at sort of the way that the country gets run and the way that the world is, you know, there's no solution getting pushed into water systems. And so that is a bit of a driving force on a sort of on a personal level. Why I really think what we're doing at Blue Earth is important, because, you know, that's a broken system there.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I mean, it's probably quite sensitive for you to share, so I appreciate it. I mean, gosh, what a thing to happen. Wowee. Okay, so, I mean, I'm touched by that, because it is important, I think, to get across that personal kind of commitment and purpose and values. So tell me about the opportunities that Blue Earth brings about for people. What are these actions that people can take? What are these solutions that people can get involved in? And why do you think, you know, that's going to make a difference when nearly everything for the last 30 years that we've tried to do for the better hasn't?
Yeah, I think exactly what you said. The last 30 years, you know, you look at what Blue Earth's mission is, and it's really clear. It's to transform the way the world works. And to do that, to actually transform the way the world works, there has to be an understanding of how it does work today. So if you don't like how it works, come up with an alternative, come up with something better. And a big part of the summit, which is, you know, this week, is about reconnecting the working world. And that, when we talk about the working world, that's not, you don't necessarily, not everyone works in a business. You know, some people work in the public sector, some people work in government, some people work in the third sector, in an NGO and a charity. And even though they would all say that there needs to be some element of change, they probably wouldn't quite agree on how to do it. You talk about 30 years, you know, we're about to have COP29, and what progress has been made in the last 30 years? I think not enough. And I think that is because we've got to appreciate how the private, public and third sector work. And the third sector can't be expected to come up with the solutions. You know, they're driving awareness of the problem and holding business to account. That's a mighty task in itself. The public sector, government, you know, they're dealing with plenty at the moment in terms of their job in a nutshell is to maintain status quo.
Yeah.
So I think we look at the private sector and go, can business go where politics can't? And I think that there's something to be said there. Can business go where politics can't? We believe they can. And that's a big driving force behind what Blue Earth Summit's all about.
Great. I love that. Let's get into that. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've got a new government. Clearly, they're a lot more switched on when it comes to committing to things that they've actually said they were going to do in their campaign, which is a good start. There's, you know, seems to be more of a commitment to sustainability, which I think is really, really important. But the problem with politics is it's potentially short term thinking, isn't it? And whereas business, you know, it has to be long term thinking. If you're thinking in business short term, you're going to be out of business very, very quickly, right? So there is that completely different thought process that happens. So over the years, then, what do you think has been the standout moment where you've gone, we've cracked this, we've actually, you know, this is the moment that I've kind of had a vision of happening? Is there anything that really sticks out where you've gone, yeah, we are actually doing something right, it's having an impact, it's making a difference? And what is that?
So I think we definitely haven't cracked it, and we think we'll be doing Blue Earth for many years to come and absolutely find our work so interesting and purposeful. But the fact that we do get people from across the working world, we get politicians, we get people running big companies, small companies, and we have the third sector there talking about the problem. So the moment we cracked it was when people showed up. Which is, you know, when you arrange a party, you always want people to show up and you want the right people to show up, that they then bring their friends. But no, we're certainly a long way from thinking that Blue Earth is, you know, it's still learning, it's still innovating in itself. But this year it does feel like its most formed version of itself in terms of how do you reconnect the working world.
I think that's healthy. I'm glad you answered it in that way. It's really healthy. But has there been something that you've kind of, you know, took a nice inner warm smile at going, you know, yeah, we're on the right track? Is there anything like, you know, for you personally that you've seen and gone, yeah, that feels good. I'm glad we set this up.
I think we can look back now. So we had people on stage in 2022, so 2 years ago, and they talked about things they were going to do. And now they're back in 2024 and they've done it.
Oh, good.
So we had a guy this year or 2 years ago called the Hardest Geezer, and he got quite well known. He ran.
Oh, he's brilliant. I had his interview on Stephen Bartlett's show, which was I loved it.
Well, there you go. So he joined in 2022. He stood on stage with no shoes on saying, I'm going to run the length of Africa and I want a sponsor, please. And we had all these outdoor brands there. And, you know, that was an opportunity for him to say, yeah, everyone says this can't be done, but I'm going to prove everyone wrong. And 2 years ago, since then, he's gone and done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, I can't get hold of him now. He's too famous. But
he's too busy.
but back in the day, he said he was going to do something and he's gone and done it. So that power of impossible, and we use inspiration around adventure and all that kind of stuff to do it. So that was a sort of a moment where you can now start going back into the Blue Earth archives and go, well, what were we saying in 22 and what's happened since? And there's lots of stories like that.
I love that. I love that. And I think everybody, if you don't know about the Hardest Geezer, look him up, because he did an incredible thing. And I tell you what, some of the stuff that he had to go through, I mean, he got kidnapped. It was all kind of amazing stuff. But all right. Well, this is great. I think we're getting into some juicy juice now. But let's play one of your songs. I always ask my guests to give me a couple of songs that are soundtracks to the climate crisis for you. Some people come with a kind of a bit of a, you know, a warning. Some people come with a happy tune. It's like, so, you know, what song have you chosen? Don't tell us why, but let's go with your first choice and then you can tell me why you chose it after we've listened to it.
Okay, so it's Truth by Jungle and it's a banger, so enjoy.
Great, Truth by Jungle, here we go. Will, that's an amazing tune. What a banger. Why did you choose that?
Well, I think it's in the background. You know, they're a great band and they're just got a real vibe about them, but also the word truth. And I think there needs to be a greater degree of truth in when we talk about reconnecting the working world. Let's get a bit more honest about, you know, NGOs and third sector. They don't actually have all the answers. They're pointing out the problem, and government, you know, you start saying, okay, let's go to government. Let's create some change there. And a lot of the time they need a viable alternative, you know, talk about whether or not we're doing drilling in the North Sea, fossil fuels. Why are we still doing that? Well, because there's not a viable alternative. And it perhaps is a bit politically incorrect to talk like that.
Yeah.
And I think big industry, you know, they're quite happy with how things are. And so I think what I would say that to make change happen, you know, to really drive change and to come up with different directions, you've got to be prepared to say the wrong thing. You just got to be a bit more honest around, you know, and then I never hear an NGO saying, well, you know, water systems are in a terrible state, but I've no idea how to fix it. Mm. You know, they would say that, they would feel that that was some sort of give to another thing. And I think if you are a bit more honest, you know, you're going to bring more people in, you know, bring in the mavericks, bring in the rule breakers, bring in the people that see the opportunity to start a market, you know, create a market, come up with a solution. You know, it might not be that they have a climate background, but they're like, I've got the opportunity to start a business that's going to solve some of the world's biggest problems. You count me in, you know, and then call me an environmentalist if you want to.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. It's real purpose-driven stuff, isn't it? And I think there's a really beautiful moment in that discovery about yourself, that if you can kind of challenge yourself to go, well, what do I love doing in this world? Or what am I really, really good at? You know, and how can I then, you know, do what I love, the thing that I'm really good at, and use that for a, you know, positive, impactful, solution-based initiative, company, movement, whatever it might be. And become a solution, right, to the climate crisis, which is essentially what your summit's all about. I think, you know, worst case scenario, if the world did still continue to be, you know, evolving in the way it is, and we push ourselves beyond these planetary boundaries, and, you know, at least we'd all go out going, well, you know what, we all tried, we're all doing what we loved, we're all doing what we really enjoyed. It would be a much smoother, happier, joyful road. And actually, you know, of course, if we all did that, then we completely turn this thing around anyway. We can prove that that can happen in weeks. So no, I love that. What have you got in store this year? We're going to have to come up to a commercial break in a minute, but just give us a bit of a teaser for what you've got in store this year, and then we'll come back into to more detail after the next break.
I think real adamant, you know, we spent 3 years in Bristol sort of working out what Blue Earth is bringing to the world and how, what actions can come out of it. And Bristol was a great proving ground for that. And we had an incredible reception in Bristol, and it just felt like a great place to run Blue Earth. And as we've come to London, I think we've taken a step. Well, if you look at it on a map, we've taken a step to the right. And I think actually
sideways.
the whole event has taken a shift there to really go. Awareness of the problem is not our role here. It's innovation and solutions and giving air and oxygen and finance to these new ideas and these new innovative solutions. And in most cases, what they need is money. And I think that's a big part of the move to London, is to say that, you know, this is one of the great cities of the world. So let's get in there and bring our Blue Earth energy to London and hopefully connect some ideas with some investment.
I like that. And you're really good at pulling in the investment crowd. I mean, I've been there and had conversations with all kinds of different investors, including the investors that got involved in our My Green Pod project back in the day, you know, 13 years ago. Have you got an investor background?
No, I haven't actually. I have a founder background. So I see investors as something necessary rather than something to go out for. I think there's a feeling out in the market that some entrepreneurs are like, well, if I do this business, I'll get investment for that, then I'll go. Whereas my background is, if I solve that problem, then the business probably will look after itself. But I don't run Blue Earth alone. I have a business partner who's actually a brother as well. And Guy runs the investor side. He has an investment background and he worked in crowdfunding and has just been in that investor space and speaks the investor language. And I think that's really important as well, that these have got to be serious businesses with a serious return for investors. It can't just be pull on the heartstrings, because, yeah, you'll get some philanthropy at that level. But what we're actually looking to do is unlock finance at scale, really sort of institutional investment. So it can start with friends and family. It can then go into sort of connections, then goes into VC, private equity, Series A, B, scale up, you know, big corporate financing solutions. And this is something that London has enabled us to unlock, which is, we're talking about, you know, British Airways doing a deal with Qurate, funded by Standard Chartered, which is, you know, we were never talking like that 2 years ago. But it's, you know, bringing finance to the table to give to give real oxygen to the ideas that come to our platform.
Nice, that's brilliant. We're going to go to a commercial break. Let's get into a bit more on that, because you just dropped us with a big kind of bombshell with a BA, QA and Chartered Finance or whoever it was. So let's talk about that, because I'd like our listeners to understand what that actually means in real terms. So we'll be back soon. Stay with us. We'll be back with Will shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Leading to Clean on UK Health Radio. I'm here with Will Haler, co-founder of the Blue Earth Summit. Will, you just told me about bringing investors on board, which is a massive issue right now, isn't it? I mean, I think that, you know, maybe there are enough solution-based technologies, you know, ways of supporting nature, investing in natural capital, so i.e. protecting nature, you know, sequestration, restoration, etc., etc. So the, if we had the money, it's pretty damn sure that we'd be able to fix most of the issues. Yeah, the carbon one is an interesting one, but trees are the most sophisticated technology to pull the carbon out of the atmosphere. So if we can get, you know, trillions of trees back in the ground. But Tell me about this that you've just talked about. So you mentioned BA, you mentioned, I think, Q8 and Chartered Standard, was it? They're the investors. So what's that in?
Well, I think that's a sort of, that shows how Blue Earth can go from the startup world right through to the multinational world.
Yeah.
And I think there's a naivety. Actually, I think maybe that's a bit unfair. But if we said, you know, we shouldn't fly anymore. Right. And there are, and I know plenty of people that are so passionate environmentalists that they say, no, I'm not going to fly. It just completely is at odds with how I want to live my life. And I say good luck to them and good on them for living by those values. But I do think it's unrealistic to assume that not only is the developed world going to stop flying. You look at a country like Indonesia or across Asia, and you say, oh, you know, cheap flying's out. Sorry, guys, we tried it. It doesn't do much good for the world. So, you know, we're banning that. You know, we've got to be careful with how we go, you know, that sort of colonial background that is such a sort of stain on our past. And then suddenly we bring it in with all the right intentions, but it sort of comes out again in this sort of green colonialism idea. So if we're going to fly, which I absolutely, you know, I fly all over the world, two events similar to the ones that I'm sure you go to as well, Jarvis, and you're thinking, okay, how do you fly better? You know, let's understand that. And at the moment, they haven't quite worked out how to get scale into, you know, sustainable aviation fuel. That's the thing that we need. We need to get off fossil fuels. Everybody understands that across multiple industries. But if British Airways are saying, well, hang on a minute, you're putting a huge amount of carbon up into the atmosphere, they are now doing a deal with Curate, which is carbon capture. And I have to confess, I'm not a carbon capture expert, but the team at Curate certainly are. And they are going to join us on stage this year and demonstrate how carbon removal at scale can make what they describe as hard to abate sectors better. And I think there's you know, there's a whole conversation around, is that even worth it? And there's, you know, you see government policy at the moment to say, yeah, carbon captures, that's the route forward to net zero. It might be, you know, I'm a bit more of a purist than that. I actually think let's leave the carbon in the ground in the first place. But being a realist in terms of transform the way the world works, we're pretty hooked on fossil fuels as it stands. There's a bigger debate around who would like us to stay hooked on fossil fuels. But if for now we are, and the carbon removal is part of the pathway to net zero, then, you know, we would welcome that as part of the solution rather than the whole solution.
No, I think you're right. There is a transition period. There's no way we could all come off fossil fuels tomorrow. The whole world would stop. You know, there's lots of things like refrigeration, transport, shipping. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's obvious stuff. I was having a conversation with my wife yesterday, and thank you for saying that. I mean, you know, I do have to fly to places sometimes that you just can't drive to, or you can't, you don't have long enough to sail. You know, just because we have to keep the lights on and keep paying, you know, our mortgage and rent and everything else. But you know, I did say to my wife yesterday, I said, and she's the editor of My Green Pod magazine, by the way, so she's way more knowledgeable than I am. I did say to her, you know, we could solve this problem, couldn't we, actually, if you really think about it. She said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, look at the pandemic when that happened. Like, the whole world came to a standstill. About $12 trillion was created out of nothing. And people respected the rules. So yeah, there was, you know, there were rules and challenges put upon us, and people by large respected it. And within weeks, we began to see air pollution drop, nature coming back, et cetera, et cetera. The only thing that really began to fail was the economy. So you know, let's look at that. Let's look at the bigger picture version of that, right? 85% of goods that are purchased are non-essential. When we went into the pandemic and everything was kind of switched off, we were moved into a slow down lifestyle. The economy started to collapse, yet nature started to come back. Now, if I was to put the two things on some scales and go, which one would I prefer? I'd rather have the planet come back, wouldn't you, rather than the economy? But I, you know, so let's get into that a bit, because you're talking about investment, you're talking about money, you're talking about, you know, technologies that could actually reduce some of the issues. They're not going to stop it. Where do you hand on heart lie with that? Like, you know, if we move back to a barter or a sharing economy or some kind of economy that, you know, that didn't include money, which seems to be a bit of a man-made false economy, if you truly ask me, but I understand its necessity right now. Any kind of, you know, heartfelt solutions to that?
Yeah, definitely. So my background prior to, well, where I did politics as a degree, which basically teaches you perhaps think of other careers other than politics, but it was it was a fascinating degree, and it got my whole, that was everything. I really loved, you know, university, and I'm going back 20 years now, but you know, and that's just sort of where you sort of look back onto it. But it's all about human existence. For me, that is what we're, if you miss that piece, you have completely missed the point in terms of transforming anything. Like human existence is what we're talking about here. And how do we live better? And that isn't, you know, we talk about sort of the last 100 years being as detrimental as it's ever been to the planet, the Industrial Revolution, all these different things that are coming off the land and excess and buying things we don't need, all those sort of things. But if you go back thousands of years, literally thousands of years, human existence and a pursuit of something better is just in our DNA. You know, we can come on to businesses that talk about sustainability being in their DNA, which is, I've got huge problems with that phrase a lot of the time. But when you talk about what's in human DNA, it's a pursuit of something better. And I think
you're right, because everything, even a business, is humans behind it. It's humans that are driving it. For now, maybe the AI situation is a whole nother conversation, but for now.
Yeah, so it is that pursuit of something better. And if you can invent something that's better, not just for people, but also for planet, that, I mean, how cool is that? Like that, talking about purposeful. If you're an entrepreneur and you're a radical thinker and you're a maverick, and the kind of people you mentioned, COVID and lockdown, all the people that slightly bent the COVID rules, and I'm not talking about politicians here, I'm talking about people that were told that they could only go out once a day, but they snuck out twice. They were only allowed to go and see people next door, but they went to the neighborhood behind. You know, these are the sort of maverick, rule-breaking disruptors. Like, these are the people that we want to bring in to the solution. You know, they might say, you know, say you're an environmentalist, say absolutely not, I love seeing the world differently, I love bending the rules, I like disrupting the status quo. And what Blue Earth Summit is saying, well, come in, get involved in our festival, because we're reimagining how the world's going to look like. And we're not just tinkering around the edges. We're talking about major transformational change. And that's something that in the last probably 2 years, but really coming to light this year, we're really talking about transformational change. And that's massively exciting. We weren't doing that at the start of Blue Earth, and we are doing that now.
Yeah, well, hats off to you, mate. Hats. I'm really, really excited about being there with you on Wednesday and Thursday. We are coming to the end of our show. I want to get your next song in, and I do want to come back to you. You've got time to think about, if you were the business leader of all leaders, the kind of Elon Musk, the one that people everyone listens to, what would you champion right now? So you can tell me that after we played your next song. What is your next song? And just tell us quickly why you've chosen it, so I've got time to bring that question in at the end before we head on to the hour.
So the next song, it's got an upbeat feel to it. It's called Heavy Cross by Gossip. And it's just energy. And that is a band that is the epitome of doing things differently. There's not any band like that. Do things differently, think different, and think outside the box. And I think that they've got a real beat to it. And I encourage people to look them up because they're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love that. I love your approach to that, because that's it, isn't it? If we can think out the box, be radically different to the way we are now, because clearly it's not working, then we might have some hope about actually, being responsible for this challenge we've got on top of our shoulders. This is Gossip. Let's hear this tune, and we'll come back to Will in a few minutes. Oh, great record, Heavy Cross by the Gossip. What a fantastic, just energizing tune. Thank you for choosing that. Okay. So, Will, we are going to have to end the show after this last bit. Thank you so much for joining us. So I brought in the context of Elon Musk because, this is an entrepreneur that I think comes from the space that you're talking about, disruptive, created, amazing things. You're now in the position that he has, which is whenever he tweets or says something or is interviewed, people listen. I know things have slightly changed since he took over X, but I'm a big supporter of Elon still because of his freedom of speech. So that's my take on it. So here's your moment. Everyone's listening to you. The whole world is eagerly anticipating your next words. What are you going to say to them?
I think if you're running a business or you're about to start a business, I think you've got to look at whether it meets the needs of society. I think when people talk about, 1.5 degrees or the planet, I think the planet will actually be fine. We just won't be very fine on it. I think just actually is what you're doing on this earth enabling things around you to thrive or die? And if they're dying, think twice about whether or not you're going to be part of the future. But if they're actually going to thrive and they're enabling things to grow around you, then that business probably has got a future. And I think it's all about the fundamentals of what I believe a business is and should be is meeting the needs of society, which is essentially your customers.
Yay, I love it. I love it. I think that's absolutely brilliant to end on. And I will back you up on that. Everybody talks about us being in a kind of disruptive time. I definitely look at it that we're in a repositioning time. I often give lots of advice to businesses having been in the space for a long time. And I say to them, is your business, when legislation and everything else comes in, and potentially we all get locked inside because we're not allowed to go out because we can't use the kind of energy and resources in the way that we're using them today, is your business going to be able to survive that kind of disruption in the world? Is it a repositioned business that's offering solutions? And if you're not, you're probably going to fall by the wayside.
I think to end on, I don't know how much longer we have, but you talked about at the beginning of the show, tipping points.
Yeah.
I think there's general awareness about tipping points, but if you can put a different spin on a tipping point, I think we're at a really exciting tipping point. We talk about energy, tipping points for energy. We're really about to change the way that we consume and create energy, and we're going into a regenerative system, not an extractive one. And if you're part of that solution and you're on that chain train, then you deserve every success that the world will bring to you, and that's whether it's people or planet. And I think that tipping point is massively exciting.
I agree. I agree. Hats off to you, Will. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to attend the Blue Earth Summit, then get your ticket, get involved. I'll see you there. Funnily enough, Will, my talk is about, is this a climate crisis or is nature giving us the biggest opportunity we've ever had? So on that note, Will, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to my producer, Johan, behind the scenes. Thank you to all the listeners. Any questions, any input, show up at the show. We'll talk to you in person. Thank you very much for joining me on this Monday.